Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, friends, and welcome to the Plus Mommy Podcast. I'm your host, Jen McClellan, and here we explore plus-size pregnancy, motherhood, and body love. From bumps to bellies, we talk about it all. Now, let's get started. Hi, friends. Today, we are joined by Christina Hughes. Christina is a fat-positive coach, doula, childbirth educator, and she is passionate about plus-size pregnancy, but she uses the F word, and I love it, and we're going to dig on into it. Welcome to the show, Christina.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Jen. It's an honor to be here.
Oh, I'm thrilled, and I appreciate the work that you're doing. We need more voices and more people speaking up about plus-size pregnancy and, you know, just like you've said and I've said, like helping to change the narrative of what it's like to exist in a larger body and go through conception and pregnancy and postpartum. So why don't you share a little bit about what got you into this specific passion with your work with Big Fat Pregnancy?
Yeah, you bet. So, I mean, I have been fat my whole life. And for me, that came with many doctor's visits over and over again, where weight was the primary concern. Weight was, you know, brought up at a very young age. I was told for many, many years that I would either never have children or that I would have a hard time having children because of my weight. I also struggle with cystic ovarian. I don't have PCOS, but I have cystic ovaries. And so with all of that, there was just a lot of talk of, you know, never being able to follow the journey to parenthood. And, you know, that was really disappointing. I've always been someone who'd wanted kids. And so when it was time to start trying, my partner and I thought, well, you know, we can just try, right? Like there's nothing that stops us from trying. And, you know, went to my doctor and, you know, he said, it'll be at least a year. Don't get your hopes up, you know, if it happens at all. Yeah. And I got pregnant in one cycle.
Wow.
So I think that kind of shocked my world in terms of pregnancy and like, okay, here we go. We're doing this. And at this point, I'd been on my eating disorder recovery journey for about 7 years. I'd been into body liberation, starting to understand the language. And it kind of all just clicked when I got pregnant that like, I don't have to let this be my narrative. I don't have to let this be my journey. And if I'm going to do that, if I'm going to stand my ground, then I need to find the best people possible to support me in the body that I have now.
Yes.
So I did that. I interviewed countless providers and countless doulas and finally ended up with a team that, you know, ultimately believed 100% in the ability for my body to birth exactly the way it was at well over 300 pounds. And I think that number is important to mention because some people are like, well, how fat actually are you? You know, there's a lot of that question when you can't see me. So I created this birth team and I was able to very fortunately have an amazing, empowering home birth. And then repeated that with my son as well about 9 months ago. So, you know, I feel just super passionate about the access, people having access to quality healthcare that believes in who you are, regardless of markers or regardless of risk factors, that you're a human being first and foremost. So these two journeys kind of collided with some master's work I was doing and some folks I got in touch with. And I was like, you know what? Other people need to know this. Other people need to hear that they can exist and, you know, have this deep, joyful, transformative experience just the way they are right now, not X pounds from now, not X years from now. And so Big Fat Pregnancy was born to shout that from the rooftops as loud as I possibly could, that it's possible to have this experience and be treated like a human being and enjoy the, you know, the journey to parenthood, not just endure it.
Yes. Enjoy it, not just endure it. That's powerful. I love it. Can you speak? Can you speak a little bit to what you were looking for in searching for that care team? And what were the things that made you be like, nope, you're not the right fit for me?
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the first questions that I asked was, you know, what experience do you have working with those living in larger bodies or with fat folks? How comfortable are you with my fat body? And that question usually weeded out people right away. You know, you can see the grimace or the discomfort in me calling myself fat, you know, that popped up right away. So that was usually an indicator of like, maybe they're not going to be the greatest. But really, in the end, I actually joined with a midwifery team. And the midwife has said something really harmful. And I was like, nope, I'm done. I'm out. And she actually called me and she said, hey, I really connected with you and I'm curious why you're not continuing, you know, care with me. And I told her, and that was the first time I'd ever really been honest with a provider and, you know, said what I needed to say. And she said, wow, like, thank you. Thank you for, you know, educating me. Thank you for letting me know. She said, would you be open to trying again? And so we had a meeting, you know, again, we talked about it anyway. So long story short, too late for that, you know, she changed, you know, quite a bit in the journey of working with me. Yeah. I don't think that's a common thing. So I always ask, you know, what is your comfort? What experience do you have with Haze, with Health at Every Size? What experience do you have with eating disorders? Because for me, that's a really big, big thing. What's your experience? What's your preference for consent first language? You know, there's a lot of things depending on what values folks hold and what identities they hold in addition to being fat that are really important to ask. You know, one of the things too, I like to talk about is, you know, how many fat folks have you seen or how many, you know, folks are coming through your office that are outside of the quote unquote norm. And that can also usually give me an indicator of whether they're willing to work with those in larger bodies.
But I love that you gave that midwife another chance because you could have easily been like, nope, this was an uncomfortable experience. I'm not going back. But through you working together, you have impacted the lives of so many just in that one act beyond everything else that you do. But like that, I'm sure changed how she, not only how she practices, but how she has her team and impacts the whole birth community.
So. Yeah, I hope so. I mean, and I think, you know, there was definitely that moment where I just shut down. I was like, nope, I'm done. I cannot be in this situation. But then when she reached back out to me, it was like, wow, you actually do really care. Like, okay, we need to, you know, you're worth kind of having this conversation, you know, with, you're not going to just shun me or, you know, push me away. And it really gave me the confidence to have those conversations with her the rest of my two pregnancies, you know, to be able to say, hey, these things are coming up again, or like maybe could I give you some resources on, you know, this, which I hate is the responsibility. I just like is the responsibility of fat folks, you know, that shouldn't be. And a provider who's willing to learn to me is better than a provider who, you know, won't even consider it. So
yeah, I think we all learn from our experiences. We all have our individualized biases, but when we're exposed to certain things, it broadens our perspectives and can help us change our views. Mm-hmm. And like you said, this is not your responsibility, but you did it. And because of that, it also provided you with incredible support and birth experiences, which is fantastic.
It's definitely one of the things that I talk to my clients the most about is like, it's a muscle. You have to use it. Yeah. You have to practice it just like anything else. It's not easy to confront what we view as authority figures, right? And say, wait a minute, that's hurtful. Or I think you're wrong. Or can we explore that? But the more you do it, I mean, it's become second nature for me now. Yeah. And that's the hope is that, I mean, the hope is that I become obsolete, right? The work that we do becomes obsolete. But in the meantime, my intermediate goal is that folks feel comfortable and confident to have those conversations to, you know, protect themselves and to, you know, open the doors for these kinds of conversations.
Yeah, it becomes empowering to walk into situations instead of holding so much anxiety and fear once you have those tools and that ability to advocate. Yeah. What were you searching for within a doula? And you Can you give us a brief description to the listeners of what even is a doula?
Yeah, you bet. So a doula is an emotional and physical support person during your pregnancy. And they often explore kind of some of the concepts of birth that are coming up prenatally. So they can talk about, birth intentions, birth planning, what's your care plan afterward look like, pain management. They're basically just a third party that's present and there and available for you. So if you do happen to have a partner or a family member in the room, it's a third person or fourth person to have eyes on you, to support you, to support your partner. It can be anything from physical comfort measures of actually, physically helping you get off of a bed or get a birth ball, or it can be emotional support, reassuring you that you can do this, that you are doing this in the actual birth portion. And then, I also do postpartum work. So supporting families in newborn education and getting adjusted to their life with a new little. So that's just basically what a doula is. And when I was looking for a doula, I had very little knowledge about what they were. I was brand new to the birth world, thrust into it by a pregnancy. And I really wanted someone, I wanted someone who was fat, because I wanted to know that they knew my experiences, that they knew my life, and they could relate to what I was going through. That was really important to me. And I couldn't honestly find anybody. The closest person that I found was someone who had previously been fat. And I was like, okay, this is good enough. We're going to interview them and see what their story was. And I just fell in love with her. I happened to create a really strong connection with her. And she had a very similar style of communication and a similar style of asking probing questions to get to the true answer of what I was wanting or needing in that moment. And I knew that would come in handy when I was not focused, on the external world, when I was in labor land, as we call it. So yeah, and I really wanted someone who was going to be comfortable touching my fat body and know that because of where I carry my fat, or, how it was comfortable for me to bend or not bend, that they would be able to move with me and they would be able to know or suggest or support my body as it needed to move. Because I was planning a home labor, I wanted someone who was going to be comfortable in my home, who felt like a part of my life, because I didn't want this like stranger lurking in the corner, while I was trying to get birth. So yeah, just making sure that I had that like physical capability of someone who was comfortable with my body as it was, who knew how to help me move in the tub, who knew how to help me walk, who wasn't afraid to grab my waist or, alter things when a hip stretch didn't, work, or a hip squeeze didn't work. So I asked those questions, point blank. Good. I said, would you be comfortable touching my belly? Would you be comfortable touching my butt? Like, because I wanted to know that it wasn't going to be, that I wasn't going to be alone, that I wasn't going to have to figure these things out by myself in the midst of labor. So.
Yeah. So, so important. And I definitely identify with like wanting someone in a larger body for that comfort level. Yeah. But then I also had a doula who my friend hired, and we just totally hit it off. And I joke that she's like the size of my thigh. So I was like, well, am I going to feel it? But she was just like, girl, get over yourself. You're amazing. Your body's incredible. We'll do it all together. We're going to dance together. It's going to be rad. And I was like, okay. Yeah. And my partner also clicked with my doula, and that made a big impact as well.
Same. Yeah. Same. My partner and my doula really, really enjoyed each other as well. And it made a big difference because she really coached him. I needed him more than anybody. And so she really coached him when he didn't know what to do, right? Because we'd never gone through it together as a couple. So I talk a lot about that with my clients of like, obviously having someone of size would be great because you know that they may have shared experiences. Also, though, it depends on where they're on their own journey, because a fat person can be just as damaging as a thin person if they're not doing their own work. And so for me, it was finding someone who I connected with. I encourage folks to have as many interviews as the doula will give you before you make a decision, because, and in your home, where you feel comfortable, where they're going to be, or, obviously that's not for everybody, but, making sure that they're comfortable with you and you're comfortable with them and that you feel like you can ask them anything. That's more important to me, I think, than many, certifications or trainings, because someone who you're comfortable with, you're going to ask them to do what you need in the moment.
Oh, totally. It's that gut check. Like, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. like, of course, you don't know 100% sure, yeah. but you get that vibe right yeah. away. And then in 2020, you became a doula. So mm-hmm. talk about that experience of going from having your own birth and your own advocacy and learning all that you did on your own and then wanting to start Big Fat Pregnancy yeah. and wanting to do this work.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think birth for me was a transformative experience, and it was empowering, and it was raw, and it was real. And I saw through, you know, through my own eyes, which is, you know, always, you know, rose colored, how the process impacted me. And I wanted to be there in whatever way I could for people on the other side. I've always been a caregiver, and it seemed like a really appropriate way for me to channel those, you know, skills, that desire. And honestly, yeah. I mean, pregnancy made me fall in love with birth. Like, I didn't realize that this was the field for me. I didn't ever think about birth work. I grew up in North Idaho. I had no idea what a midwife was. I had no idea what a doula was. And then I got pregnant, and it was just, my eyes were open to this amazing group of folks who, you know, work tirelessly to support people in one of the biggest, you know, can be one of the biggest milestones in a folks' life. So yeah, I just thought, I can do this. Like, I can do this. I can support people. So I started my training with birth advocacy doula trainings and moved through their course. I'm still working on my certification. I have mixed feelings about certifying, but, you know, serving folks was really my biggest goal. And I started an Instagram for educational purposes. And yeah, I've just moved through the path from there.
I love it. So why fat? Like yeah. the word. Of course, I love it, but not everybody does.
No.
So that was still a big decision.
Yeah, it still feels kind of controversial, I think, to many folks. I think for me, I got tired of it being weaponized. And mm-hmm. from what I've heard about the reclamation of, you know, the word fat for many folks was that it was just a way to kind of stop the weaponizing of that word.
Yeah.
But it also came with an internal decision to stop believing that my body dictated my life, right? That my body dictated what opportunities would come my way, what, yeah. you know, love I could let in, what friendships I could let in, what opportunities I could let in. That may be a narrative people are, you know, familiar with, is that I let being fat, that part of my identity, control my life for so long and control my decisions and control my friendships and my relationships, that I just got to a point where I thought, you know what would happen? What if I just said I'm fat, right? And I tried it on, and over time it was like, yep, I'm fat. It's cool. Like, I got belly fat, I got thigh fat, I got chin fat, I got back fat, I got arm fat. It's all there. I love it. But I've grown to that. And that doesn't work for everybody. Some people will never accept that word. But for me, it took the harm out of the word. It took the power out of the word. And it also gave me a weird sense of confidence of, like, you know, no one could put me in that place ever again, right? Like, I am fat. Yep, that's a fact. You know, so what, right? Like, for me, you know, it just gave me this kind of confidence to move into more of those, I think, that work around liberation and empowering and, you know, being comfortable with those sorts of conversations with doctors. So it kind of was a
yeah.
multi-step process to get there. But I love it. I think it's been one of the most powering changes in my language as far as how I identify. So
oh, I love it so much. I remember way back in 2011 when I was starting a blog, having no idea mm-hmm. what a blog was. And I was like, I want plus size. Mm-hmm. Like, that was like yeah. the big, like, mm-hmm. but it felt almost scary to come out as yeah. plus size, even mm-hmm. though I want M, yeah. you know, yeah. it's like, but it was like a big deal, like, to use the word plus size mm-hmm. in like the beginning. And so, and then it was like mommy memoirs, which is no longer a yeah. thing. And, but it was just in the beginning trying to figure out like my own identity. Mm-hmm. But I remember hitting publish on that first post, what is plus size mommy memoirs?
Yeah.
And it felt liberating yeah. to be like, yeah,
yep.
I'm plus size and I deserve to be treated with dignity. Mm-hmm. I had this, you know, healthy pregnancy and empowering, and I use the word transformative too, birth experience, but there wasn't that narrative out yeah. at the internet at that time. And even today, yeah. like, there's not a lot. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah. I completely identify with, and I hope for the listeners too, that they think about the language that they use when mm-hmm. they talk about their bodies, because we can so easily use words that make us feel defeated or make us feel, you know, at home in our bodies, mm-hmm. like I'm really short and I'm really fat and that's just me. I'm like a little teapot and I'm adorable. Yeah. And that's fantastic. Yeah. And I say to my son, like, how boring would life be if we all looked the same?
Yeah.
Like, life is so beautiful because we come in all different yeah. sizes, colors, shapes, abilities, and ages. And
it's one of the things I work with the folks that I coach a lot on, too, is like, find what works for you. Like, your words don't have to be my words, right? If you prefer fluffy or chubby or plus size or big boned, right? You get to choose. You get to choose what works for you. But standing in the power of whatever that word is, right? And knowing that, like, you are not going to use it in a derogatory or defeatist way, right? That's what can change. That's what can change your language. And for me, your outlook, too. I mean, for me, fat was the word that was off limits for so many years.
Yeah.
You know, that I was like, nope, I'm done hiding from that word. Like, I am fat and that's okay. Right. And that second piece came with work and, you know, a little bit later. But yeah, just picking a term and being really open to that changed my life.
What has been the feedback you've gotten?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's mixed because there depends on where someone is in their own body liberation journey.
Yeah.
You know, because I will definitely use it in conversation with people. I don't even think about it anymore. It just is one of my identities. Like, you know, we hold, and people will be like, oh, you're not fat, you're beautiful, or, you know, whatever the common right ones that we've heard a million times. And I say, nope,
you're like, I'm fat both
and beautiful. Yeah, exactly. and sometimes they're puzzled and they kind of look at me, and then they usually move on because they're like, I don't want to get into this. But, you know, then other people in my life who are in the same circles or, you know, have the similar journeys, right? It's just a second, you know, second nature. But I take every opportunity I can with anybody who will listen to explain to them why I've chosen to use that word, because it does really start the conversation of like, okay, that's some bias right there. Like, why do you think that it's not okay to be fat, right? It's one of the easiest gateway conversations to start with someone about why they want to, you know, hurry and tell me that I'm not actually fat, when that's just the, you know, case in point of looking at me and seeing my body. So I'm also 6'1". And so for me, my stature has just always been out there. It's not, I'm not hideable. I'm large and tall. And so it's always been a point of conversation. My body's always been up for conversation. And so I feel that reclamation and being able to call myself fat is a part of that identity now, just like my tallness.
It's interesting. Something struck me when you said that, of being large and being visible. And yet I've always been big, but I've always been really short. Mm-hmm. I'm only 5 feet tall and a half inch, and I've always felt kind of invisible. Mm-hmm. So how interesting that is, that we both exist in larger bodies and we walk through the world being felt, you know, othered, but in very,
very different
ways. That's really powerful. So I know you have your master's in education, which is incredible. And I know, I have to believe that, you know, has just really empowered you within your coaching work and working with people in larger bodies around pregnancy. One of the things that you talk about on your Instagram, which I love and follow, over at Big Fat Pregnancy, and your website, is helping people to unpack their own internalized fat phobia. Mm-hmm. Could you share a little bit about that with the listeners, and maybe a tip or two?
Yeah, I do a lot of work with folks to first and foremost understand where they are, right? It's really important to understand where you're at in your journey and what other identities may you also be working with at the same time, because we're not just one, you know, we're not just one person. I'm also chronically ill. I'm also disabled, right? All of these things play a part in my journey. So we talk a lot about, where are you? What are you bringing to the table? What's been neglected in your life? Like, what have you shied away from, right? In terms of fatness or other identities that we need to unearth. And then how do you want to show up? You know, what is your what would be your like freedom, right? What would be this like end result, or you would see yourself at the end of the time working with me, and what would that feel like? What would it look like? What would your pregnancy look like? You know, so we talk a lot about where we are, where we want to go, and then obviously the work that we do with me, and their internal work is getting there. So, and I spend a lot of time asking why. Why do you believe that? Whose truth is that? That is one of the most powerful questions that I have found. When I think something, you're not worthy, you know, you shouldn't have nice clothes anyway, you know, your baby's not going to be healthy, right? When those things pop into my head, my first gut reaction now is, whose truth is that? Where did I learn that? Who's telling me that that's true? And if I'm telling myself it's true, then, you know, why is that true? Where did I learn that? You know, and usually those two questions can get you to the bottom of, oh, well, when I was five, you know, my neighbor told me that I was too fat to play in the sprinkler in a two-piece, right? Like, we can find these core memories and these core things that are then usually compounded by our fatphobic society. And we can usually understand and start to work on those and start to rewrite the narratives and rewrite the language for folks to replace those thoughts. It's really powerful to be able to choose your statement, your like combating phrase, right? When those things come in. And I truly do believe that working on that, talking through things, having someone listen, having someone validate the, you know, the experiences you've had in your fat body, can do wonders to, you know, moving to a place where at least you can hopefully find acceptance. If not love, right? Acceptance of neutrality, that your body just is the way it is. And really decoupling the belief that because of my body, I can't do something, you know, specifically in pregnancy, because of my fat body, I can't get pregnant, or I will lose my baby, or I will harm my baby, or I shouldn't have even gotten pregnant because I'm fat, right? Or I will have X intervention, right? Those are things we really have to work to break down, because they're all rooted in internalized fat phobia. They're all rooted in the core messages that fat folks have heard their whole life, that being fat is bad, that being unhealthy is bad, and that being unhealthy means you're somehow less deserved of the things we experience in life, right? That brings in the ableism, right? So, you know, there's so many layers to uncovering these things that we just automatically tell ourselves. And so it's my job to, I view my job as a place for people to sit with that, to talk about it, to uncover it, to challenge it, and then hopefully to walk away with a new perspective.
Yes, I love it. And it's also freeing when, I mean, it's terrifying to dig into it.
Yeah, it's the hardest thing I've ever done.
Yeah. But then it's freeing. And I find that I look at, you know, other groups of people, like Black people and people of color and LGBTQ+ communities, and I look at it with just new eyes and more compassion and me wanting to do better and learn more because I'm working on my own biases about myself and my bigger body. And then I have so many other layers and biases that I'm always unpacking, and it makes me want to do the work on all areas and work even harder. Yeah. So it's this wonderful door that you open. It's almost like a mirror, right? Like you're looking at yourself, which can be terrifying. We can either glance and see ourselves every day, or we can really look and do the work.
Yeah.
And once we do the work on ourselves, then we can start digging into other biases that we have. Yeah. And not only does it make us more well-rounded people, but we teach our children these things as well.
Yeah. I mean, that was something I was shocked about. Like when I actually started challenging my own internal bias around fatness and where my truths came from, how deeply embedded those truths are in racism and classism and ableism and sexism, right? Like they all stem from this, you know, kind of belief that Black fat bodies and Black fat, you know, females, right, are the worst, you know, you can be, right? Like that's, if you've ever read Sabrina String's book, Fearing the Black Body, or Deshaun Harris, and I think is their name, Beast of the Belly of the Beast, both of those just opened my eyes to where this fat phobia really comes from and how deeply embedded it is in, you know, our racist origins. So yeah, right. It does. It opens these doors, right? Really not fun doors, but doors that we have to open. It's our responsibility to open as white people.
Yeah. Necessary doors.
But yeah, necessary, right? Necessary for the work to be done. But yeah, it was amazing to me how intertwined and like more aware I became of like, these are bigger than me as a person too.
Yeah.
And I think that also gave it a little less power of like, wow, this isn't just, you know, a media outlet telling me that my body is too fat for fashion, right? Like this goes way deeper than that. And I think that also helped me realize that it's outside of myself, right? That like, I don't need to be so worried about how my physical body shows up in this world, because there are much more important things that I can, you know, be working on and working towards. So
I love it all so much. I have a question for you, because I've been digging into ableism more, and especially around plus size pregnancy. So when I started doing this work, it was just trying to get the word out that people could have healthy pregnancies and larger bodies, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that was like the push was like, you know, plus size doesn't equal high risk and, you know, people of all sizes can have healthy outcomes. Mm-hmm. And the focus was health, and such a focus. And I've always been clear to say, but if you incur any risks throughout your pregnancy, there's not one thing that only happens to larger bodies. There are risks for people of all sizes during pregnancy. But there's been more so now with the younger and fresher voices in this movement, which I love and I'm learning from, this push against health, right? And that we don't need to be healthy to be treated with dignity and compassion. And I have 100% agree, 1,000% agree, right? And that people with disabilities get pregnant and have outcomes and it's all good. But I would love to hear your unpacking, because I think health is something that nearly everyone strives for during pregnancy.
So
what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, that's such a good point. And it is something that I've also dug into. And I often say I was, you know, blessed with a very healthy pregnancy, right? But the fact that I have two children like shouldn't be qualified or predicated on my health status, right? And I think the biggest problem comes when we have a very standardized, medicinalized, you know, version of what health is, right? Like when we say health, whether you want to or not, there's usually an image, words, descriptors, you know, behaviors that come to your brain of what health is, right? And so getting away from the universal definition of health is something that I work with my clients a lot on. We talk about, what's your definition of health? What's your definition of well-being, right? How do you things where you can show up in the world as the best person, and how do you like be okay when you can't, right? Because that's the reality too. So trying to really move away from the fact that like health predicates or is a requirement for life, basically, or you know, is a requirement for, like you said, equal treatment or access to care or affordable care, or you know, it shouldn't be that you have to meet certain requirements to be respected by your doctor, right? Like you shouldn't have to have a certain BMI in order for them to offer you all treatment options, right? Like that shouldn't be the case. So for me, it's really focusing on helping people understand what is their definition of health. And is that something they even want to strive towards? There may be way bigger things in their life that they want to, you know, conquer and worry about than, you know, their health. So for people who are focusing on health or trying to move away from BMI or weight, you know, I often focus on health promoting behaviors, which, you know, sleeping, drinking enough water, joyful movement, right? Things that you can actually see a pretty profound impact on the traditional health markers our society uses, like blood pressure, blood sugars, you know, cholesterol, right? You can see this pretty big impact when we focus on health promoting behaviors over weight loss. So that's a conversation I have with folks who are trying to just move away from the traditional definition of health. And then with anybody I work with who is disabled or chronically ill, neurodivergent, you know, we talk a lot about what do you want your definition of this to be? And then how can we move, you know, towards that? And that can mean a whole host of things to, you know, different people, depending on where they're at and where they're going.
I found myself in my writing using the word well-being more than health, because I feel like that's so, like you just said, we individually define what well-being looks like for us, whereas health, mm-hmm. like you said, is more defined by society. And always yeah. stepping away from that one number mm-hmm. on the scale. Mm-hmm. I think I'll probably still use a lot of language on like Instagram around healthy pregnancy, just because society still mm-hmm. doesn't believe that people yeah. in larger bodies yeah. can have healthy yeah. outcomes. I still feel like that's a necessary mm-hmm. push. Yep. With the caveat that, like, yeah, we need to change yeah. the definition of health.
Yeah. And I think you see that in the stages of internal work and this external culture, because that mm-hmm. was definitely a stage that I went through in my, you know, battling of fat phobia of like, well, it's okay that I'm fat because I'm healthy, you know, because yeah. because my numbers are good or because whatever. Yeah. Right? So I had that phase individually, and I see mm-hmm. us as a culture in that phase too, of like yeah. some people are like, okay, yeah, it's okay if you're fat as long as you're healthy. Right. Yeah. And so it's just different levels of this ableism coupled with fat phobia that we're untying and unconnecting to each other that have to happen in order for us to get to that point where we're like, health may not be the ultimate goal. Like, and if I'm not healthy, it doesn't mean that I don't deserve to live a really great life, right? Like, right. And do what I want to do and have children if I want, or not have children if I don't want to, right? Like getting rid of this expectation, this requirement of health to be a valued member of our, you know, society is really important.
Yeah. And like you said, like you support people who are chronically ill during pregnancy, and they should absolutely have every right to become mm-hmm. parents as yeah. well. Like yeah. who I've always felt like, who am I to tell someone yeah. what they have the ability yeah. to do with yeah. their body? Yeah. Like that is a conversation between them mm-hmm. and their care providers. But why do we not have more supportive and empowering resources
yeah.
to help people have more positive outcomes? Yeah. Like, I mean, isn't that?
Yeah. And that's the question, right? It becomes so frustrating because ultimately everything is tied back to research and funding, and all of our research and funding focuses on BMI and, you know, the O word, obesity, right? Everything yep. is still framed in those lenses. So all of our research outcomes, all of our data are still framed in those lenses. And then we have to try and somehow extrapolate from that and be like, but, those numbers don't really matter. Fat people are cool too, right? Like, you know, we're fighting against a system that right now isn't set up to support fat people, right? It is still very much a medical, you know, and societal system that believes being fat is bad, you know? And there yeah. are people out there, God bless them, who are doing the work to fight that within the medical system. You know, I know doctors and nutritionists and, you know, people and eating disorder specialists, right, who are really working to shift that narrative. But, you yeah. know, it's 10 plus years for research to catch up to practice, if, you know, if it ever does. And we're still producing research that is based on BMI, mm-hmm. right?
So yeah, the last study I read, and I need to see if there's a new one, but it was like, it would take 20 years
yeah.
for something to be proven as evidence-based mm-hmm. for it to get pushed into practice.
Yeah.
But we can see things be expedited when there is a consumer push.
Yep. Yeah.
And there is a consumer push, like, yeah. right? A decade ago, I couldn't imagine using the word, you know, because it's plus size birth now, but like fat birth. Like, yeah. I just wouldn't have even considered yeah. it yeah. because that wasn't a word that was normalized in our society. Mm-hmm. And now it is becoming, and it's being taken back. And I think it's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, my hope is that people don't ever underestimate the strength of numbers, right? The strength mm-hmm. of the voice, right? Like if we as patients, consumers of the yes. medical industry, you know, together rally around these things, right? There we can see change faster, but it requires people doing their own work. It requires people getting mm-hmm. to that point where they're aware of the roots of fat phobia, right? Where they're evaluating it within themselves. And that's yeah. hard. It's hard work, especially when many of our family structures and our society structures, right, are still in a place, right? When I talk to yeah. my mom about being fat, right, it's a different conversation than when I talk to my fat best friend who's the same age mm-hmm. as me, right? Like we have to, you know, we have to be aware of that as well. And, you know, my mom's coming around, like she, you know, she's getting there and she loves it for me. Right. But it is a constant point of where you're like, oh yeah, I see that you still may believe this about fatness. Right. And we have to, you know, just be willing to work on that, you know, personally. So, and I choose to work on it professionally, which means I'm in it all the time.
Yeah. Same. It's exhausting and awesome all at the same time.
Yeah.
Are you plus size and pregnant or trying to conceive? Do you wonder where you can find cute plus size maternity clothes or when you'll start showing and how to embrace your pregnant body? What about having a healthy pregnancy and how to reduce your increased risk? Find the answers to these questions and so much more within the My Plus Size Pregnancy Guide and audiobook. From nutrition and physical activity to prenatal care expectations and the importance of hiring a size-friendly care provider. You'll not only learn information to help you make informed decisions throughout your pregnancy, but start to develop a new relationship with your body. Download this guide and start using it at any point in your pregnancy. Stop Googling and start feeling empowered today. Use code PLUSMOMMY to get 20% off the My Plus Size Pregnancy Guide and audiobook.
Why don't you share with us your definition of fat positive care?
Yeah. So this is something that I've been working on because I believe that there's a lot of talk right now around weight neutrality and around weight inclusivity. And there is research that's definitely moving to these points where we're either not considering BMI in the conversation, where we are looking more at health indicators, right? Markers of health, where we're not talking about weight unless the client, you know, specifically asks, or we're not talking about it at all. But I would like to move it one step further. And for me, you know, having a fat positive, you know, lens is really my ultimate goal, right? It's what I try and operate from. And for me, it combines weight inclusivity. So, you know, the idea of all people deserve, you know, health, access to healthcare, no matter what size they are, that, you know, we don't need to focus on the pounds as a marker of health, right? All of these things. But it also adds the intersectionality piece that we can't forget that we are not just one identity. The folks we serve are not just one identity. And it also includes trauma-informed care, because I believe that we really need to be aware of the fact that people are coming to us with things that they may not have even uncovered yet. And the likelihood that, you know, a fat person has experienced an adverse childhood trauma is higher. And then we add on things like bullying and harassment and sexual assault, right? Like all of those things are also things that fat people experience that they can bring to their journey as well. So for me, it's a holistic viewpoint of how we're caring for people. And it starts with the fierce belief that fat bodies are capable and deserved. So.
Yes, it's very powerful. And I think like we've been talking for like almost 40 minutes. We've been talking for 41 minutes and we haven't talked about gestational diabetes risk all these normal things that you would think would be part of a conversation about pregnancy and larger bodies. And we've really spent the bulk of our time talking about, well, how did we get here? Mm-hmm. How did you get here to this work? And that so much of it has been unpacking those internalized biases and then that self-advocacy piece. Yeah. And I think that those things are so incredibly important and critical for having the outcome that we desire during birth, which ultimately it could be a cesarean birth or a vaginal birth or a home birth or a hospital birth. We just want to be treated with dignity and supported. Mm-hmm. And how do we get there? And a lot of how we get there is, like you shared, working to find the right team, advocating for yourself along the way. Like I hear stories from people that share, and I think in my head and don't say it out loud, oh my gosh, that sounds really traumatic. But they look back on it and be like, I was supported, and I'll never forget that one nurse that held my hand. Yeah. And to me, that's all that matters is how they feel about their birth.
Yeah. Yeah. I talk about that often, is that you can still have a positive birth experience even when things don't, quote unquote, go your way, right? Or when they don't go according to your birth plan, right?
Yeah.
That is the number one indicator of whether people respond or report a positive birth experience, is if they felt cared for and respected mm-hmm. during their experience, right? You could have every intervention in the book that you weren't planning for. You could, you know, and there's still going to be obviously some processing to do around that as well.
Well, yes.
But, you know, you could have all the interventions and all the things go differently, right? But if you have a team around you who you know has your best interests at heart and is listening to what you want and is caring for you and is asking for permission before they touch or before they do something, right? Those things can make more of a difference than, you know, than anything. But yeah, I think you're right. I often get questions, gestational diabetes. What should my body look like? What should my belly look like? How much weight should I gain? Right. I often get those questions, and I usually always try and back folks up to, you know, okay, we gotta do some different work first, because if you go into those conversations with your provider with the mindset that these things are bad or make you somehow less deserving or give you more stress or anxiety, right, it's going to be triply hard to work through any management of, you know, of a complication during pregnancy when you're also blaming your body and, you know, being feeling like you can't ask questions to your doctor, right? Yeah. Or right, those things are way more important to build a foundation, because then you can deal with anything else that comes down the road, right? And you know that the people in the room aren't going to shame you or limit your options because you're fat, or, you know, only prescribe X when they could be prescribing Z, right? Like, but having that foundation for me, it is the key to those outcomes.
Yeah. And not only for birth, but for the rest of our lives,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's changed my life in many of the doctor's appointments that I, you know, have, and the ability to have a conversation and affirming, because how quickly the argument falls apart that I need to lose weight, right? Like, it's just time and time again been shown to me that, like, we're suggesting something that doesn't work, and doctors know it doesn't work, but they don't have anything else. And so it's just, you know, it's just still the common rhetoric. And so I feel very, very affirmed when I go to the doctor and I'm like, well, and has it lasted for more than 2 years? Has it been effective long term? Have people kept off significant amounts of weight? You know, what other alternatives to health promotion can you suggest? Right. And it just crumbles. And that for me has really, really also shown that, like, I'm on the right path, that, you know, folks need to know this as well.
Yeah. Oh, you're such a good advocate. Yeah. I had a doctor not that long ago. I mean, aside from the midwives that I was supported by during birth, never good experiences with care providers until recently. And I'm in my 40s and I'm talking to my doctor and he's like, well, you are healthy.
Yeah.
I'm just like, pinch me. Am I in the twilight zone or is it really happening? Are doctors really looking at every health marker being like, you're healthy? And he's like, and you enjoy walking, keep walking and enjoy these things and start sleeping more. I'm like, I need to do that.
I mean, like I saw a rheumatologist through who all of the conversations we had in the end still suggested aggressive weight loss. So not even just like lose weight, like aggressively lose that weight. Right. And then I saw my primary care provider, who is wonderful, affirming, and she was like, well, how do you feel? And I was like, well, I feel great. She's like, cool, go with that. You know, and so it's just it all depends on who's in the room and who's got your ear. And I think it's wildly important to be prepared with the language, you know, even if it's not comfortable, to be able to say, why is that? Could you tell me more about that? Do you have some research that I could look at about that? You know, where did that come from? Is that policy or preference, right? These simple interrupters can pause a whole negative spiral of a conversation that leaves you feeling gross and hurt, right? And it can change it into something where you're like, okay, I don't like the answer, but I asked and I did what I needed to do and I said what I needed to say. And now I'm going to move on, right? I'm going to find a different provider, or I'm going to, you know, deal with this one because it's the only one my insurance covers, or the only, you know, one I have in my city, right? But now I know I can walk into that room every time and confidently decline their request for being weighed, confidently ask for a bigger robe, confidently ask for, you know, an actual exam, right? Like, versus just gently patting on my first layer of fat, right? Like, you know, you can start to be more comfortable in those situations.
Yeah. And it was so exciting seeing the conversation around refusing to be weighed go viral earlier this year.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, people of all sizes understand how traumatic the scale can be.
Yeah.
And it was like, finally, like, because in fat advocacy, it's like something that we've been pushing for so long. And then to see mainstream be like, oh, yeah, I don't really, why am I being weighed when I'm going to the doctor's office and I have a fever? Like, or I have a cold, or I stub my toe, or whatever it is. Like, yeah, this doesn't make sense. And it was good. Yeah. And I hope the conversation is shifting. And I love, you know, the energy now that's building and the advocacy that's building, as opposed to, you know, growing up feeling well, like, oh, I just have to do everything my doctor says. And now, like, no, you know your body better than anybody else. And you need to be your own best advocate. But there are still many things that our healthcare system refuses to budge on. And I just don't know when we'll see that change.
Yeah, I mean, people are kept from life-saving and life-improving surgeries and procedures daily because of BMI.
Yes.
Fertility, gender-affirming care, breast reduction, chest reduction surgeries.
Yes.
Knee surgery is a really common one, right? People are kept from these things that actually, if you just did the surgery and let them live their life, they'd be much in a much better place, a much quote-unquote healthier place. Than denying them to try and get them to lose weight. And, you know, my anger starts to really grow when I have this conversation, because there is not one study that shows that anybody can lose a significant amount of body weight and keep it off for more than 5 years, right? Not one. And yet we still prescribe this as the end all be all for every problem a fat person has, right? And it just, it blows my mind, because how can that be in accordance with the first rule of medicine, which is do no harm?
Do no harm.
Right? And I go back to that every single time someone tells me they were denied for something like that, because the harm that you are creating out of this decision, right, is way worse than the harm the fat person is doing to themselves by being fat, right? And I say that, I don't mean that they're the responsibility of being fat is on them, right? Genetics, all the environment. I want to be clear on that. But right, like, that is just, that's where I just lose it, right? That's where I just can't scream loud enough that, like, this system is so broken, because we see that every single day. My mother-in-law just went through it as well. She had four doctors before she found someone who would ignore her BMI and give her the knee surgery. Let me sign a freaking waiver.
Yes.
Let me sign a waiver that says, I know the risks. I'm fat. Give me the surgery. Right? Like, you know, if you really are worried about my overall well-being that much, then give me the surgery and let me make that decision for myself. Fertility treatments, right? That's a huge one. If you don't follow Nicola Salmon, please go do that immediately.
Yes.
Fat positive fertility.
She's amazing.
Fertility is a huge one.
We've had her on the show, and I'll put her episode in the show notes.
So
we're at Plus Mommy.
She's so great. Yeah. But yeah, it just, right, it just goes on, and it goes deeper and deeper. And, you know, anesthesiologists refuse to, you know, anesthetize fat people, or epidurals work. They say epidurals work less on fat people, right? And it's just all of these things, again, are steeped in that. Whose truth is this? Where did this come from? We're using BMI that was created by a eugenicist and implemented by an insurance company, right? Like, has nothing to do with health, right? And those are the places where I just break down, because I'm like, I see this. You see this. This person over here sees this. Why can't these people who spend 12 years in school studying medicine see this, right? Like, the policymakers, the insurance companies, why can't other people see this? So, and because it's not profitable. So,
But you think, like, fertility treatments are profitable. Yeah. And my thing on that is, like,
everybody to be in the door.
We're now marketing to people of advanced maternal age, which have about the same risk profile as pregnancy in a larger body. So why are we marketing to one segment and then literally closing the door on another?
Yeah. And
it's fat phobia.
And I've worked with so many clients who have gone through, had conversations with clients who've gone through the fertility process and, like, literally been told at the door before they even are allowed to have an appointment. Your BMI is too high. I'm sorry, we can't help you. And then we ask, where's the policy? Where's the written policy? Yeah. What evidence are you using? And they literally can't produce a thing. They right. literally don't even have it written down. And so it's like, no, like we may need different levels of, you know, hormones or, you know, different levels of X, right? That may be an adjustment you have to make because of my larger mm-hmm. body. But yeah, the risk profile is the same yeah. for many, many other, you know, quote unquote, high risk populations. So,
or two stories recently interviewing people of, well, they were able to get fertility treatments, but they would not use any anesthesia for egg retrieval.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Oh. Wow. Yeah.
So one of them went through it and it was really traumatic and awful. And the other was like, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
So I wish people didn't even have to make a decision
no,
like that. Like
of course not.
What yeah. people have to go through
yeah.
sometimes to become parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's people like you and me and like yeah. countless others that are having these really tricky and difficult conversations to empower people mm-hmm. to raise awareness. And look, if we're getting to this place where a conversation around not stepping on the scale can become viral,
yeah.
then I have to yeah. believe, I have to believe, and hopefully it won't take another decade.
I hope not.
But I have to believe that we're going to get to a point where people are like, no, people should be able to have gender affirming surgery mm-hmm. regardless of BMI, as long as you, like you said, you meet different health markers. Like
yeah.
we need to look over overall risk factors, but provide that individualized care. People should be able to have fertility treatments. There are so many different levels of fertility interventions
yeah.
that shouldn't have blanket BMI mm-hmm. restrictions and turning people away. People should have access to birth center births, to home births, to
yeah.
all these, to water birth. My goodness. Like,
yeah.
Come on now.
To eat during
to
labor.
To eat in labor.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's frustrating.
Right. At the end of the day, right, it's about the power that we're holding over other people's bodies, right? Like,
yes.
we just need to let people be informed of the risks, informed mm-hmm. of the rewards, and let them make their own decisions, right? Like,
yeah.
that's really what we're blocking people from doing, right? We're deciding for people based on this false definition of health, right? When they can do something as important as starting a family, right? And that just
yes.
at a base level is wrong to me. So yeah, I mean, I hope too. That's why I scream so loud. That's why I will turn blue in the face when I talk about this. I don't talk to anybody who will listen, because I think it's part of a bigger conversation of the fact that we deserve autonomy to our bodies as human beings. And that extends to fat births, you know, as well.
Yes. Oh, I absolutely adore you. And thank you for all that you're doing.
Oh, thank
tell
you.
Us, tell us about your coaching, what you
yeah.
offer
yeah.
and where everyone can find you with
yeah.
Big Fat Pregnancy.
Yeah, you bet. You can find me at www.bigfatpregnancy.com. No surprise there. My Instagram handle is at Big Fat Pregnancy, as are all of my other social media handles. And my coaching is really aimed on creating a relationship over time where folks can do exactly what we've been talking about, uncover where they're at, where they want to go, and what beliefs do they hold about their body's ability. My favorite time to work with folks is early preconception or early pregnancy, because then we can really have that kind of longer time frame. I do 10 to 12 month coaching packages with folks. So I do really
wow.
full scope of either pre-pregnancy to post-pregnancy, where we can move through as an individualized approach to whatever concern is coming up for you, right? I was so isolated in my pregnancy, even though everyone was so happy for me, right? Everyone wanted to help, but I didn't have any other fat people. I didn't know what this experience was going to be like as a fat mm-hmm. person. And I had so many fears because of the internet, because of doctors, right? And I would have killed for someone to be like, yeah, let me research that for you. Let's talk about that, right? Where are you? Why are you afraid of that? You know, what do you think could happen? What could be some alternatives, right? So that's what I do. I work with folks on an individual level throughout their pregnancy. I go to prenatal visits with folks if they want me to. I help them have conversations with doctors if they're not sure of the language themselves. I furnish them with the studies that are currently supporting, you know, my viewpoints, their viewpoints around fat pregnancy, so they can take them to their doctors and have a conversation. And then I add in that doula work so that if someone is local or wants me to virtually support them, I can actually be present with them in the birth. And then I do postpartum support for that same reason, because the stigma doesn't end there. Fat parents also encounter enormous levels of judgment and bias and stigma, and then raising children who are probably also going to be fat because genetics, right? So yeah, I'm there for it all. So I do one-on-one ad hoc cow coaching packages. I do full spectrum doula support and childbirth education. So folks can find me on online, connect with me, DM me. I love hearing birth stories. I love hearing pregnancy journeys. I love hearing anything you want to share with me. You know, this is my calling. And so I'm open for conversation, for hire, for support, for I'm here for it all.
And where is local for you, for anyone who's like,
ooh. That's a good question. So I live in Edmonds, Washington. So in the greater, I serve the North King County and greater Snohomish counties in person. This is in Washington State on the West Coast, and then virtually, obviously, anywhere. So I support folks virtually nationwide, even internationally. So
wonderful. Well, I follow Christina over at Big Fat Pregnancy on Instagram, and I encourage you to do the same. Such great educational information and advocacy tips, and just all around a badass. And I, again, am so thankful that there are far more voices doing this needed work now. And we're going to see change. We're going to fight for that change because by the time I'm my dad's age and need a knee replacement, I don't want anyone telling me anything. And today I want to support the person that needs access to fertility needs and not feel like they are continuously turned down.
Yep. So 100%. Yeah. I'm here with you in that fight. And yeah.
Yay. All right, friends. Until next time, take care. Bye.
Goodbye.